Welcome to today's edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In addition to feature reports, I'll bring you a look at regional and national agricultural news. And the show starts with a look at California agricultural news. In California, the agricultural sector faces significant threats from invasive pests and diseases, particularly concerning backyard citrus trees. The California Department of Food and Agriculture highlights the importance of awareness and proactive measures against such threats, especially during Invasive Plant Pest and Disease Awareness Month in April and continuing thereafter. The CDFA's Citrus Pest and Disease Prevention Division emphasizes the role of backyard citrus tree owners in combating these threats, including the deadly Wanna Long Bean disease, which was first detected in 2012 and has led to the removal of over 7,600 HLB-positive trees across Southern California. HLB spreads via the Asian citrus ciliate, a small insect that feeds on citrus leaves and stems, posing a fatal risk to citrus trees without a known cure. To combat the spread of ACP and HLB, residents are advised to inspect their trees, cooperate with agricultural inspections, properly handle citrus waste, utilize registered budwood, control ant populations, and remove neglected citrus trees. Quarantine zones have been established in several counties to prevent further spread. Additionally, invasive fruit fly populations have prompted further restrictions on the movement of homegrown produce, including citrus. For more information on preventing ACP and HLB, residents can visit californiacitrusthreat.org. California employers in the agriculture industry are facing challenges this spring after two major developments last month. First, new rules took effect requiring employers to provide a special written notice to H-2A employees. And second, farm worker allegations came to light regarding union organizers' coercion and misuse of federal funding benefits. Governor Gavin Newsom signed legislation last year making changes to the state's wage theft notice requirements. What is the wage theft notice? Since 2012, the Wage Theft Prevention Act has required California employers to provide a written notice containing certain information to each non-exempt employee at the time of hire. Initially, the law only required the notice to contain basic wage and hour information, but amendments to the law have expanded to what the notice must cover. AB 636 was enacted in October of 2023 and amended the Wage Theft Prevention Act by requiring all employers to include additional information in a wage theft notice regarding the existence of a federal or state disaster declaration applicable to any county in which the employee will work, and agricultural employers must provide new supplemental notice to California farm workers admitted through the federal H-2A agricultural visa program. The legislature stated that the new requirements for H-2A employees were needed because the number of foreign agricultural workers admitted to the state is dramatically increasing, and many of those workers do not speak English and are not familiar with their basic legal rights. Changes took effect on January 1st of 2024, but H-2A employers operating in California were required to give workers a copy of a supplemental notice template provided by the Labor Commissioner beginning on March 5th. The California Department of Industrial Relations published a template, which you can find at dir.ca.gov. The Organic Produce Summit has announced that the keynote speaker will be Sherry Frey. The consumer landscape is changing rapidly, and consumers are demanding more from every purchase they put in their basket, especially as their view of wellness expands beyond personal to environmental and socially responsible. As we look to the future, Gen Z consumers appear to be strong organic shoppers. This session will explore the impact of shifting consumer demographics and demands on organic produce and how the industry can continue to identify new marketing opportunities. Frey has more than two decades of industry experience and is a recognized thought leader on health, wellness, shopping, and consumption trends. With a background in marketing, market research, innovation, and consulting with clients across the food industry, Frey will share visionary foresights combined with practical strategies. The panel is called Changing Consumer Impact on Organic Produce Opportunities, and it will be held on Thursday, July 11th from 11:30 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the Organic Produce Summit. The Organic Produce Summit is the only event exclusively dedicated to connecting buyers and suppliers in the organic fresh produce industry. The summit will be held July 10th and 11th at the Monterey Conference Center. The Organic Produce Summit features educational sessions and keynote presentations, as well as showcases solutions and innovations across organic produce providers. It will bring together over 175 organic growers, shippers, and processors from all corners of the business, providing a comprehensive one-stop shop for retailers and buyers in the organic fresh produce industry. For more information and to register, log on to organicproducesummit.com. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency is releasing an update to its draft herbicide strategy, which is part of the agency's plan to improve how it meets its Endangered Species Act obligations. The revised draft strategy is in response to comments received on the initial draft. The draft strategy, which EPA released for public comments in July of 2023, describes whether, how much, and where mitigations may be needed to protect listed species from agricultural uses of conventional herbicides. The goal is for EPA to use the strategy to proactively determine mitigations for registration and registration review actions for herbicides even before EPA, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and the National Marine Fisheries Service formally complete the lengthy ESA determination on whether an herbicide has effects on a listed species. EPA received extensive comments on the draft strategy, who identified concerns with specific aspects of the draft strategy and suggested revisions. EPA plans to make a number of improvements to the draft based on this feedback, with the primary changes falling into three categories. Number one, making a strategy easier to understand, as many commentators noted the complexity of the strategy to determine the amount of mitigation a label requires for a particular pesticide, up to 9 points of mitigation. In response, EPA is simplifying its approach, such as by using four different tiers to describe the amount of mitigation that may be needed for each herbicide. Those tiers would be none, low, medium, and high. They also plan to create educational materials that concisely explain the four-tier mitigation approach. Secondly, increasing flexibility for growers to implement the mitigation measures in a strategy. EPA expects to expand its mitigation measures, especially for specialty crops such as cherries and mint, to include new measures such as erosion barriers, reservoir tillage, and soil carbon amendments. EPA is also working with the USDA and other organizations to identify other measures to add to the mitigation menu that can reduce pesticide runoff and erosion. And third, reducing the amount of mitigation that may be needed when growers have already adopted voluntary practices to reduce pesticide runoff or where runoff potential is lower due to geography. For example, in areas of the country with flatlands or minimal precipitation where runoff potential is low, growers may need less or no additional measures to use ag herbicides compared to what is currently in the draft strategy. EPA is also considering whether growers could meet any necessary mitigation requirements if they participate in ag conservation programs or work with qualified experts to design and implement mitigation measures. EPA is also working on other changes to the herbicide strategy and how it is implemented. For many listed species, the maps used in a draft strategy for determining where mitigation measures would apply are often too broad, covering areas not needed to conserve the species. EPA is working with the Fish and Wildlife Service and others to develop a process for refining maps for hundreds of species. The agency expects to publish a final strategy in August of 2024. To help growers manage irrigation and nutrients for young and immature orchards, the University of California Cooperative Extension is offering workshops in Modesto, Merced, Fresno, and Bakersfield. The workshops will feature presentations by various experts and researchers focusing on the best irrigation and nutrient management practices tailored specifically for young orchards in the San Joaquin Valley. They will cover almonds, pistachios, walnuts, olives, and citrus. Attendees will gain insights into the irrigation and nutrient needs of young orchards, which are different from those applicable to mature orchards, and learn strategies for adjusting these practices as orchards mature. That, according to Monai Mohammed, UC Cooperative Extension Irrigation and Soils Advisor for Stanislaus, San Joaquin, and Merced counties. This knowledge aims to ensure healthier tree development, better resource use, and more resilient orchards in the face of climate change. Growers, certified crop advisors, and other agricultural professionals are encouraged to attend. Workshop attendees may request one-on-one assistance from the UCCE Farm Advisor. For details and for registration, go to ucanr.edu.
By partnering with JCS Marketing Incorporated, your company can achieve 3.5 million impressions to growers, consultants, and industry professionals annually. Our comprehensive media suite, which includes prestigious publications as well as dynamic websites, targeted emails, engaging podcasts, and premier trade shows, provides a strategic platform for targeting key decision makers. This approach can amplify your company's visibility to a specific audience and fosters meaningful connections, positioning your brand at the forefront of the agricultural community. Don't wait for success to come to you. Call our office today at 559-352-4456. That's 559-352-4456. California's bearing almond acreage decreased slightly over the past year, according to a new report from LandIQ, an acreage mapping service out of Sacramento, to the Almond Board of California. It is the first since at least 1995 that the total number of bearing acres has not grown. Almond Board's Senior Manager of Marketing Order Services, Bryce Speicher, has the numbers.
This is the first time, certainly since we've been working with LandIQ, that we see a bearing acreage reduction, albeit it was slight. So LandIQ puts out two estimates, acreage estimates for us each year, an initial one, this one that was released on April 24th, and then a final one where they come back and put out final numbers and final removals that'll come out in the fall, typically in November. And if we look at where the final number was last year and where the initial number is this year for the upcoming crop that we'll harvest this fall, the reduction is, again, the first time that we've seen since 1995, when NASS was doing the acreage. And it was about 591 acres, bearing acres. So it's quite small. It's a fraction of a percentage. But it is noteworthy to see that for the first time in decades, bearing acreage has decreased from the year before.
This trend toward lower overall almond acreage in California has been seen for the last few years.
I mentioned the two different estimates that come out each year from LandIQ. On the initial one that comes out in April, we don't see a non-bearing number. So non-bearing would be defined as trees that are 3 years or less, so they're not really producing, but they're certainly in the ground. That number comes out on the deliverable in November. And if you look over the last three final estimates that LandIQ has put out, we've seen about a 46% decrease in the non-bearing. And what that means is those are the younger trees that are going to be transitioning into the bearing in future years, right? And so we've been knowing that this kind of cresting of bearing acreage has been coming. This is just the first time we see with this report that that trend has now come to fruition. We know the bearing acreage or non-bearing in November was about 190,000 acres. That's again down from over 350,000 2 years prior. So this trend, this just kind of confirms some of the trend we've seen of the difference between non-bearing and then some of the removals that we've been seeing over the last couple of years.
With all this being said, demand for almonds is still growing globally and shipments are still strong. It's safe to say almonds will continue to play a significant role in California and global agriculture and food industries in the future.
Like a lot of crops in the state, almonds are going through a bit of a transitionary period right now. We see that while acreage has plateaued to some degree or crested, at least momentarily, we do see almonds need a Mediterranean climate to really grow. And we have one of the best places in the world to grow almonds. And so even at just over 1.3 million acres of bearing acres in the state, that's enough to provide a good, healthy supply for the industry. Really, almonds provide about 75% of the world's supply of almonds. So, if you think about that, California will continue to be a dominant supplier of healthy, nutritious almonds really for the world for the years and decades to come.
You're listening to My Ag Life. I'm Taylor Jahlstrom. Early registration for the 2024 Crop Consultant Conference, hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and Western Region Certified Crop Advisors, is now open. The popular event for certified crop advisors, pest control advisors, grower applicators, and industry professionals is the mainstay for all continuing education needs this year and will take place on September 25th and 26th at the Visalia Convention Center. Visit myaglife.com/events for the early discounted rate of $275 per person, which includes the live conference, a trade show with 70-plus exhibits, first-class dining, entertainment, and a mixer. We'll see you there.
The Environmental Protection Agency has again approved an E15 summertime sales waiver, allowing uninterrupted nationwide sales of gasoline that contains 15% ethanol. The emergency summertime waiver follows similar E15 waivers last year and the year before, and comes as EPA cites tight oil supplies from geopolitical conflict, OPEC actions, and strong gas demand at home. Renewable Fuels Association head Jeff Cooper.
So EPA is looking at all of those factors and using its authority under the Clean Air Act to declare emergency conditions for this summer and effectively waiving the volatility requirements for E15.
Cooper says the E15 waiver will help save drivers money, especially during higher summertime demand when gas prices rise.
That fuel is typically priced 25 to 30 cents below E10 where it's being sold. So drivers that are frequenting those 3,500 stations that sell E15 today are saving a lot of money when they pull up to the pump.
Cooper says those drivers are giving ethanol producers and corn growers a huge boost.
Probably about 400 million gallons of E15 sales occurred last summer. Again, only because this waiver was issued last summer. We would expect similar numbers or even larger numbers this summer.
The EPA waiver followed a months-long campaign, including letters to President Biden by nearly 1,000 farmers and ethanol workers and 46 House and Senate members. EPA earlier granted a petition from 8 Midwest governors to allow E15 sales in their states, but not until next year. That prompted the industry to call for a permanent legislative fix, including the Nationwide Consumer and Fuel Retailer Choice Act. USDA Undersecretary for Trade and Foreign Agricultural Affairs Alexis Taylor will lead an agribusiness trade mission to Colombia August 13th through the 15th. USDA is now accepting applications from current and potential U.S. exporters who have an interest in joining the delegation. For information, go to fas.usda.gov. 18 nations will benefit from a joint emergency food aid support effort announced recently by USDA. USDA Ag News reporter Rod Bain.
$1 billion, with a B, dollars in emergency food assistance to nations with populations needing life-saving food aid. The Agriculture Department and U.S. Agency for International Development Thursday announced the joint effort with funding received from the Commodity Credit Corporation.
An initial tranche of approximately $950 million will support the purchase, shipment, and distribution of various U.S. commodities, and a separate pilot project of up to $50 million will also eventually be set up to utilize U.S. commodities that have not traditionally been part of U.S. international food assistance programming, but that are shelf-stable and suitable for use in feeding food insecure populations.
Shane Danielson of USDA's Foreign Agricultural Service says 18 nations are slated to receive this initial round of support, with commodities for use in this effort ranging from wheat to kidney beans. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
More than 25 organizations are urging the U.S. State Department to stop imports of avocados linked to recent deforestation in Mexico. Illegal deforestation is imperiling monarch butterfly habitat, according to the letter, and the issue undermines international pledges made by both countries to halt these practices. An estimated 10 football fields of forest are cleared every day to create avocado plantations, according to the message distributed by the Center for Biological Diversity. Mexico is the largest U.S. supplier of avocados, referred to as green gold, due to its economic value and its rapidly growing international demand. Mexico supplied almost 90% of the fruit sold in the United States in 2018, according to the letter. Over the past 4 years, Mexico has provided 88.4%, or about 2.3 billion pounds a year, of imported avocados in the United States, according to USDA data. In 2023, the U.S. imported over 2.4 billion pounds of fresh Mexican avocados, a record number that has been on the rise in recent years, and that number represents $2.7 billion in value. U.S. avocado imports are fueling deforestation just when we desperately need intact forests to fight the biodiversity and climate crisis, according to Tanya Sanarib, International Legal Director for the Center for Biological Diversity. Most people in the United States would be horrified to learn that their avocado toast and Super Bowl and Cinco de Mayo parties come at such a devastating cost to monarchs and forests, she says. Halting imports of avocados from recently deforested areas would help protect Mexico's wildlife and uphold our global forest protection pledges. Avocados are a water-intensive crop, the letter adds, and meeting irrigation demand depletes water sources for local communities and leaves remaining native forests vulnerable to fire and disease. The group letter also details threats to government inspectors against local community members who oppose deforestation.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcast, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.